This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
From Park Racing and Casino, Ben Salem, Pennsylvania, for the first time, Sirius 219, XM 201, SportsZone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM Online, and at the website, stevebeck.com, and it's a quiet day here. Preparations going on around the building and around the grounds for what is always their biggest day at parks, Philadelphia Park, Keystone Park, and everything else that's ever been called. And through all of those incantations, there's been one constant. It's Anthony Black, and he's sitting with me. Good morning.
Good morning, Stephen. Boy, you're saying it's your first time here, or first time in quite a while.
Broadcasting.
Yep, I can't say that.
No, you can't.
When this place opened up in 1974, I left Maryland and came here because Jack Vanberg said, I'm going to send a lot of horses to this new racetrack, Keystone. You want to go? I was in my car the next morning.
Well, and being able to be close to home and your mom, right? And every family-wise, there was a lot to like about that concept.
Oh, absolutely. It wasn't just Jack Vanberg's 40 horses, and he was leading trainer and had the leading owner of the country. I wanted to come home.
Sure.
I had been in Maryland long enough. But this was a great place to make a living, and it still is for kids that are riding in this day and age. And I might even ride one more.
Well, you keep saying we're waiting. We're waiting for that opportunity when Tony gets that elusive next win. Because everybody says to me, how's Tony doing? He's not still riding, is he? I said, don't hold it against him. Don't doubt him.
Yeah, you know, once you get addicted to this game, it's hard to walk away from it and not stay in it in some capacity. And, of course, I'm not going to be a jockey. But I'd like to do it one more time just to say at the age of 71, I'd be the oldest rider in North America to win a race. So I got to win a race. I can't just ride one. I have to win one.
Exactly. Exactly right. So the right one will but you actually have not been on – you haven't really been getting on any, right, much?
You know, I was getting on horses into November and into December of last year, and then when they had a bunch of guys come up positive at the barn I was getting on horses for. They called us all down to take COVID tests. And these guys didn't, girls and guys, they didn't even look sick. And they all come back positive. And I said, you know what? I can't take something home this to my little girl, my little boy, and my mom who lives down the street. She's 97. So I stopped getting on horses. Now I want to start getting on them again.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Well, the weather. I'll tell you what. I was going to say, the weather is still okay.
Yeah.
50 degrees this morning, and the wind was howling at Center City. And I thank goodness I still had my vest that was in the car, which I brought to Kentucky. And I needed actually that first day at Presque Isle. And luckily I had when it was cold and windy. But it's sunny and bright. It's going to be gorgeous tomorrow in the 70s. And in fact, all the major venues that we'll talk about today, Parks and Pimlico, Belmont at Big A, and Churchill. But of course, you don't have to worry about Los Alamitos weather-wise, but all the potential areas of the country with nice cards, they all look like they're going to have beautiful Saturdays. Let me give you a quick glance at what's going on. Chris Griffin is on his way here, so Chris and Tony will hang out to get the show started. Tom Law, who you know, of course, from ThisIsHorseRacing.com and from Saratoga Special. And Tom is handling their media concerns. And he's been doing all the advance work and all the lead-up stuff that is associated with turf publicity. Tim Wilkin, who, of course, was with us at Kentucky Downs over the last fortnight. Tim helping out as well. But Tom is going to certainly stop by, and we'll get a couple of ideas from him. And ideas are going to be, and opinions here on this card are going to be challenging in some of these spots. I mean, certainly the Derby. I mean, I'll wait till Chris gets here, and he, I, and Tony will kick this around. We'll certainly get opinion from James Scully. James, probably an hour or two, looking at I left things a little fluid this morning because I didn't know what time, per se, Tony and Griff might come in, and I don't even know when Tom's coming in. But certainly Scully and Shapiro. No Marty McGee yesterday. I mentioned that Marty is headed to Belterra this morning for a seminar that he's doing. And I guess for those of you in and around Cincinnati, you got the opportunity to go sit in with Marty today. And it was so much fun to talk to his brother yesterday. So the Churchill opinions particularly will be focused on Scully and Shap. All right. We're going to check in with Callie Francois. There's another nice card at Pimlico. Hi-ho. They keep churning out these stakes cards and a sequence, the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th tomorrow. How about the Sensible Lady, the Weather Vane, the Polynesian, and the Laurel Dash being run at Pimlico. But big full fields, 12 by 12 by 9 by 8 in that sequence, and that's actually a pick 5, and then there's a 11th race that fills out the pick 5 at Pimlico. So we'll check in with Callie. They drew the entire card, of course, for Remington for Sunday, and we'll check back with Dale Day. And I put out that sequence, if you noticed on Twitter yesterday, I put out the sequence for Remington for the Oklahoma Derby, the Remington Oaks. They've got the green, and there's what's the other for the Vance, the David Vance. That's an all-stakes pick 4 at Remington. Very nice card Sunday for Oklahoma Derby Day. Nick Tamaro, hour 3. Oh, Jim Miller. Jim Miller, they resume at Hawthorne today. The racing picks up for the fall. So we'll check in with a quick hit with Jim and talk about the action at Stickney. And Hammer, we've got to check in with Rick Hammerly at some point this morning. Papo will give you the form to win plays. I'm going to expect that he looked primarily at the Parks action, but we'll see. Sometimes other things catch his eye as well. That Churchill card, too. Churchill card's got some heavy favorites, including Gunite in the Harrods Creek. And the interesting favorite that seems very, I mean, just seems vulnerable is Echo Zulu at even money. And she makes the return, draws the rail. And, I mean, personally, the other Asmussen is pretty appealing. Wicked Alo on the outside. And I don't think Pletcher is going to go off at 8-1, Colorful Mischief. But she caught my eye, too. That's the Dogwood, the grade 3. There's also that Bourbon Trail that we discussed yesterday with Paul McGee. Big Blue Line, his horse, is a big price. But that's an interesting set of three-year-olds. But certainly the most interesting set of three-year-olds is right here in Philadelphia, in Bensalem, I should say. And is this Bucks County?
Bucks County.
Bucks starts.
And you couldn't have said it any truer. It's an interesting set of three-year-old boys and girls.
Well, the cotillion seems a little less distinct, but
interesting.
No doubt, it's interesting, and the two Pletchers feel like the principals. The presence of Secret Oath, not a question, but it does seem a little quizzical that we had been informed that she was essentially going to get a break, and here she is, not getting a break.
You can't always predict Dwayne Lucas.
Well, Lucas, if they show any signs of interest, he's going to, you know. And look, this is the last dirt grade one going long for fillies. There is the La Brea later in the year. There's the Queen Elizabeth at Keeneland on the turf. So I kind of get it. I mean, it's big money, it's a grade one, and it's tough to say no to this opportunity.
$1 million does have some effect on your judgment.
Here he is, the one, and thank you. Chris brought me a coffee, which I appreciate. You're going to circle back? And all right, he's no work today for
no
for,
work
for
today.
Griff.
You know what? I don't think Chris has ever had the opportunity of calling my making a call down the stretch where I won the race, because he's new to this.
He's fairly new enough, right?
But doing a great job. And love his calls.
Well, and he's got a very distinct delivery. And, of course, he's going to be bringing the interesting element of, and I have not spoken to Chris. We had the conversation with Frank Miramonte when Frank was announced that Frank was going to get the Saratoga season microphone. Have not spoken to Chris yet about his portion of the New York calendar, which is going to be basically the winter season at the normal winter season at Aqueduct. And so this will be the first chance we get a chance, you know, opportunity to you know, bring that up with him.
A lot of interesting places racing today. When you were talking about Remington, it brought back memories where I rode the Remington Derby.
Did you really?
I won the prep to the Remington Derby was a couple of weeks before that. I forget the name of the stake, but it was a stake. And then I went back for the Remington Derby and finished third. Should have probably won it. I wound up getting.
Who was it?
Should have rode in the Kentucky Derby, but he got hurt. And I think the timing was different then. The Remington Derby was before. I think it was before the Kentucky Derby. I can't remember. But he got hurt in the Remington Derby. I had Aaron Grider in a blind switch trapped on the inside, and he just kept banging into me. I finished third. Finally, when he got out, I don't know what he finished. But my horse come back. He was a little worse for the wear, and we had to give him some time. Then a few months later, I wound up riding him in the Pennsylvania Derby, and he won.
Who trained him?
Cynthia and Walter Reese.
Oh, Reese.
The Reeses.
Absolutely.
And the horse they ran that year in the Kentucky Derby was his stablemate in contention. But he was nowhere near the caliber of horse of Devil's Honor. If Devil's Honor would have run in the Kentucky Derby, I might have been sitting next to you right now saying I'm a Kentucky Derby winner.
You and Stewie Elliott.
Yes,
and,
right. Stewie, he's doing quite well. He's
entirely workout. But it sort of changed the arc of his career enough that when he then headed to the Southwest, right, and latched on with the Asmussen team,
yep,
he really got into a nice situation. And, I mean, people probably don't even realize it's probably 5 years already that at least that he's been, you know, he's been the go-to. He's been the house rider for the Asmussen camp. Yeah, in Texas and Oklahoma.
What a big move getting connected with Asmussen. You can never go wrong getting connected with Asmussen. If it's just for one day on a few horses or if it's on a daily, you're on his horses on a daily delivery or whatever.
Yeah, daily basis.
Daily basis. And I know Stewie's, he was quality rider way before Smarty Jones took the stage. Stewie cut his teeth in Jersey and in Pennsylvania. I can remember when he was a little curly-haired kid walking into the jock's room, looked like he was about 13 years old. And he never looked back since then. He's done good. His dad trained horses, mom and dad trained horses. And I'm proud to say that some of his success came because of his experiences here at Keystone Philadelphia Park Parks.
Well, and you know, looking at Tony brings up, and we've talked over the years about Devil's Honor. That was '96, and you know, the history of this race is very strong, and you know, it's been, you know, even before it became a big money opportunity. Smartin won it in '79, going all the way back to, you know, to Sam Maple and Woody, yeah, Stevens for Rye Hill Farm. Summing won it as well. I mean, so, you know, Derby winners, Dixieland Band, Skip Trial, interesting, of course, for Sonny Hine with John Luke Samin. Then the famous Broad Brush, the 86 Pennsylvania Derby, which is one of the most famous races in history.
I rode Broad Brush. I rode Broad Brush here, and he tried to bolt with me the second time I rode him, and he won. But he didn't quite get out as far as he did with Cordero in the Derby when he recovered. It was unbelievable that he could go past the middle of the racetrack at the quarter pole and lose the lead and then come back and regain it coming to the wire. Broad Brush was, he was a very talented horse. And, you know, you got to understand, those horses came when the race was only 100,000 or 300,000.
Yes.
You know, the year I won it, it had been reduced from 300,000 to 200,000. You got to understand, these horses that showed up there were quality three-year-olds, the best in the country, and they came for a couple hundred thousand, but it was a great race to compete in. I didn't even know I won the Cotillion one year until you finally told me. And that year it was only 50,000.
It's amazing, actually. The Cotillion has, and by virtue of what happened to the Pennsylvania Derby, the Cotillion has probably come the longest way of any grade one in the country.
Yeah.
The fastest. And it's by virtue of a couple of things. The timing, much like the Pennsylvania Derby, the timing. This was, you know, Parks gets criticized for a lot of things. One thing that they did that was really clever was moving this card from Labor Day weekend to this third weekend of the month.
It gives people a chance to prep their horse before the Breeders' Cup.
Good prep races. It was a very smart repositioning of the entire card, and as a result, the Cotillion particularly, you know, it trailed a little bit in terms of lag time, you know, getting up to the grade one. And like you say, Tony, it was basically a $50,000 added afterthought for a long, long time. But, you know, now these two grade ones plus the Turf Monster, the Turf Sprint, which is a real curiosity. I'm anxious for some opinions here. There's at least four horses going dirt to turf in the Turf Monster. And this always makes for a quandary because you just don't know. You know, who exactly is going to take to it. Then there's the turf sprinters themselves that make a lot of sense. So that includes Michael Moore's got That's Right on the rail, who's quite good, 3-1. And that number might float up. And I thought that George Duarte as well for Rich Santulli. Nothing better. Luis Saez, who has ridden Nothing Better, 4-1. I just started there. I don't have big prices to tie in. The Gallant Bob is a race that I've got. There's 14 horses. I've got 7 as possibilities. it is murder.
Yeah, it's a very competitive field, Gallant Bob. You know, all these races that have these names that I wind up riding some of these horses that they're named after. I was just telling you earlier, I rode Gallant Bob for the last winter of his career. I think I might only rode him once or twice. And then, don't you know, I beat him here one day with My Juliet in a stake race, and I set a track record. Well, My Juliet set the track record, not me. and beat Gallant Bob, and a horse named Raise the King, or Raise a horse of Alan Jergens was in there, and some name horses were in there, and here old little My Juliet run down and run away from all of them.
Unbelievable.
But Gallant Bob, what a classy individual he was. He was an Eclipse Award-winning sprint champion, and I think at one point he won like 12 or 13 in a row before he won
a significant run.
12 or 13, I forget, but he was an amazing individual and an amazing sprinter, and J.D. Marquette, John trained him, I believe. Marquette trained him. And Gerald Galitano, a name that maybe people aren't even really familiar with. Gerald rode him most of his entire career. Gerald rode him, Galitano.
Who else, Tony? Jim Miller's going to join us. I want to get Jim in here quickly, and we'll get his advance here on the Hawthorne season. I didn't want that to slip through the cracks. So we're going to get Jim Miller. But, you know, the name we always talk about when you talk about the history here, the late Bob Kamak. But who else? Who else that over the years that is basically gone now? That either they moved on here at the end of their career, or
well, Walter Reese was a regular here. Him and Cynthia Reese, when they weren't running in Walter's name, they ran in Cynthia's name, and he always had owners that would go buy young horses, and he would breed horses. He had some horses that he bred that were. Really quality individuals, and Cynthia still has the farm in Jersey. I forget exactly where it is, but it was Bob Kamak who came to an untimely pass. It's really a sad story. I'm trying to think. When I first came here, like I said, I came here with Jack Vanberg, John, and then Frank Kirby had horses here, and they would have barns full of them. But there was a lot of good trainers here throughout the years, and I don't know why the names escape me, except maybe I just hit the ground too many times.
I'm just looking at Pennsylvania Derby winners, for instance, and some names that are less familiar. 1980, Lively King with Chris Baker up for Leon Parker, owner Frank Bonsall. Spanish drums, Jacinto riding for Anthony Arcodia. Name I'm not that familiar. After that, there's mostly, you know, Dickie Small, a lot of other familiar names. Harvey Veneer came in from Chicago with Boo Boo. With Boo Boo Clark, Western Playboy. It was a good horse.
Harvey Veneer, Chicago Racing. Gotta love Chicago Racing. Well, I spent some time out there and had the pleasure of winning many races at Arlington Park before it burned down. Only went to Hawthorne a couple times.
Well, Hawthorne's the subject. At perfect timing. I got Jim Miller.
And you know the other track that was there that I never got the opportunity?
Sportsman.
And if you looked at the configuration of that track, I really didn't miss not riding there.
It was a hairpin.
Hairpin turn. Yeah. And it was like a bank turn that you'd run a car race on.
Well, they did run car races on it. Jim Miller is standing by, and we wanted to get Jim in for a few minutes. We do this whenever the Hawthorne seasons unfold, and so people need to be aware. With all the change the Chicagoland has dealt with, important to keep people up to speed. And Jim, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Yeah, it's funny listening to talk about Sportsman's Park because, I mean, that was definitely a bull ring. It was very tight, bank turn, a very tough track to ride. And you're right to talk about it almost like an auto track. That's kind of how you had to use the turns, go up a little bit higher, come down coming out of the turns. But definitely an interesting track, and Hawthorne is itself, Steve. You know, it's a very long stretch, and it makes for an interesting meet, especially for those riders that are newer coming in. So we'll see how things go when we kick off later today.
Lay out, Jim, the fall season schedule.
Yeah, fall season schedule this year is a pretty traditional schedule for us. So we open up today. We go all the way through December the 30th. We're going to race every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday afternoon. And we start a little bit later in the afternoon. So we start at 2:50 p.m. Central. And it's just kind of trying to find that sweet spot on the wagering menu. You have your East Coast tracks that go early, your West Coast tracks that go late. So we're kind of that bridge track in between. And what we really want to do is stack those best wagering races kind of in the middle of our card so people can focus on those, maybe get ready for a later pick four. We do have turf racing here in the fall, and that's one of the things. We're in the upper Midwest. You don't see a whole lot of turf in the fall. But what it really does do is kind of allows those better Midwest horses to converge on Hawthorne for a couple of months before they head south, maybe to Tampa, to Gulfstream, or to Fairgrounds for the winter.
Well, and I was going to ask, give us a little bit of a feel for the backstretch, and of course, yep, with the summer season kind of in flux right now, and a lot of the Chicago land familiar names more or less scattered to the wind. How you looking for horses on stalls and horse population?
You know what, I'll tell you, horse population is actually really good, and that's one of the things, Steve, that we were quite worried about, because every other year, you'd have horses coming over from Arlington Park after their summer meet, and that would provide about 60% of our horses to open things up. Well, this year, we didn't have that, so you had to look around, and horsemen had to look for their different options for places to run. Larry Ravelli, for example, took a large contingent of horses over to Colonial. Brittany Vandenberg, who's always been good at Hawthorne, she was down at Ellis Park. You did have some other horsemen that chose to stay on the backside of Hawthorne, and they were basically, we have an indoor barn where they were able to gallop. But that was about it. So they're still going to be a couple of weeks away from getting everything ready to go. The good thing that is going to help us this year, though, is the way the racing schedule is going to be going into 2023, because we just had our racing dates here in Illinois yesterday, and what the determination was thoroughbred racing is basically going from now all the way until early September next year. We'll have a couple of month break in January and February, but the track will remain open for training. But for those horsemen that want to remain in Illinois, want to keep their horses active and racing, they now basically know this is where we can be for a full year. And I think that's really going to benefit the horsemen this fall as they come in, as they make their plans looking forward and knowing you have those Illinois bred horses, you have horses that can be competitive at Hawthorne, they're going to be able to remain there. So that's one of the things that I think will really help us. It was a little light opening weekend, but I can tell you, 2-3 weeks into the meet, you're going to see those traditional full fields that we have at Hawthorne.
Excellent, excellent. And another tradition at Hawthorne, and another reason why I wanted to make sure to get you on, Jim. Next weekend, the contest. And Friday, Saturday opportunities, NHC seat, two of them actually will be awarded. The grand prize winner, though, a special opportunity. We have $1 million bonus with the Beat Bic contest. If that winner, Matt Myers, if he can win NHC, he gets $1 million bonus. There's $1 million bonus tied to next week's contest. Give everybody the details.
Yeah, and that's one of those things, too. And Hawthorne contests have done really well for these players going to the NHC and doing really well. And it's great, Steve, that you are tied in with these contests, because you throw that out there and they say, oh, well, yeah, it's $1 million bonus and I'm not going to get that. Well, there's definitely the potential for that to happen. And we have our Hawthorne Invitational taking place on October the 1st. Some of the best handicappers across the country are going to be coming into town. They're playing a $2,000 live bankroll. We're going to have some selected races. They'll have an optional race. But they keep what they make, and that's really kind of the best thing about our contest is you put that money in, you're going to be able to pull money out even if you don't win. But like you mentioned, first place prize for this contest, it's a 2023 NHC seed. It's that $1 million bonus if they win the NHC. Then they get a choice also of either a seed at the 2022 Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge or the 23 Pegasus Challenge, and $10,000 for the top prize. But we have prizes going all the way down to 10th place. You're going to have these opportunities for NHC seats. And like you mentioned, that's one thing that Hawthorne really does a fantastic job about. We have these contests earlier in the meet, our traditional Thanksgiving weekend contest where we give away 10 seats over the course of 3 days. And it's one of those things where you get a lot of great players coming in. You're getting a little bit later in the season, so they need that opportunity to get those NHC qualifying seats or get that second seat. And it's something that we provide. And we have a great turnout, and these are always really good contests.
Among the favorite of serious players throughout the country that make the trip to Chicago and get involved, and wanted to make sure that everybody was aware of this Friday and Saturday. And there's also, you know, the play-in. There is, entry available Friday, right? The top finishers, they both play into the Saturday. They get into Saturday, $2,000 entry. So lots of reasons to spend the weekend in Chicago this weekend. And fall, fall in Chi-Town. How much better can it get?
Well, and I'll tell you, I was out there. I did a charity walk around Chicago yesterday. We were 23 miles walking across the city, and it actually was really nice. You're out there in the sun, 65 degrees. It was really pleasant, and that's one of the things that you see over the fall. Winter seems to push back a little bit further every year here, Steve. So winter really doesn't hit at its worst until that January, February timeframe. So we have the potential of racing on the turf into December. You have the potential for really good racing. Like you mentioned, all these contests, and you're right, look at next Friday's contest, $500 bankroll, chance to win your way into that Saturday contest. So it is. There's so many options out there. There's so many great wagering opportunities, and it's really a meet that I know a lot of horsemen look forward to, and I do as well.
I should ask, too, Jim, in terms of the stakes schedule for the fall?
Yep, so the stakes schedule, so it's, a lot of it is really focused still around those state-bred horses, but we do have next Saturday,
nice.
We have the Hawthorne Derby on the turf, $100,000 race on the turf, and it's a really solid race for the Hawthorne Derby, so we'll be pulling that field together midweek, but it's $100,000 stake going the mile in an eighth, and then after that, we focus on those Illinois-bred horses, but I can tell you, Steve, we're just around the corner, a year or two away from starting to get back those major stakes, the Illinois Derby, the Hawthorne Gold Cup, everything that's going to come with casino construction and progress here in Illinois and really kind of ramping things up again. So it's nice to see that there is some good news on the horizon for racing for us, and it's not too far away.
Jim Miller, everybody. Hawthorne Jim, of course, on Twitter, and really everybody in Illinois owes the Carey family their appreciation for digging their heels in and basically guaranteeing a future for thoroughbred racing in Chicagoland and a place for horsemen and horse players and fans. Jim, best of luck to everybody. Safe meet and successful meet, and let us know if there's anything we can pass along.
You got it. Thanks so much for the promotion of our contest. We really do have a great contest menu. As always, Steve, if they want any information, they can go to the website, HawthorneRacecourse.com, and it's all right there.
Jim Miller, everybody, one of, I guess the key to having a terrific proponent at your racetrack for this kind of you know, for these kinds of things is to be named Jim. Jim Goodman and Jim Miller, there you go, Hawthorne, and a place where certain players go every year to try to qualify for NHC. Right now, happy to welcome in Chris Griffin. Where are you going? No, he's got a microphone. He's very comfortable handling a microphone. not to worry about Griffin with the stick mic.
I forgot.
Yeah, pull this up, Tony.
He does handle a microphone pretty good.
Once in a while.
The only thing is, you've never had the opportunity of calling me in front coming down the stretch on a winner.
I know.
I might give you that opportunity.
You look fit enough. You look fit enough. You could. You never know. Maybe give him one more.
We will get one more.
Don't worry. He's not messing around.
I like it.
He's gonna do it. Hey, good to see you.
Pleasure. Pleasure.
I don't mean to be flippant, but you know, Tony, you may have to ride an aqueduct for him to call you. Win. I don't mean, you know. I'm sorry. That was laying there like a decoy.
Sure.
I talked to the other day. Frank, and we kind of discussed things. We discussed things when, you know, the news, you know, when you came here. I congratulations. I don't know what to say other than, you know, it'll be a very welcome addition in New York, and it's going to be a new landscape with the way things are at least going to start out.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, looking forward to January. You know, I mean, I've got some time, so we're gonna have our big day obviously tomorrow here, and then just take a look at the schedule and just kind of take things from there as far as getting into the fall and the winter. Like I say, Tony looks fit. You know, get back up there, but in January, that's when I'll be looking at Aqueduct and getting started and kicking off 2023, and looking forward to the opportunity. It's just, you know. It's, you got to pinch yourself sometimes, but I do the work to get there too. So it's been a fun ride. I've enjoyed it. Plenty of work to be done here in Pennsylvania, and really looking forward to 2023 for sure.
Well, we looking forward to having you in New York. And I mean, not to turn this into a you know, Lazy Susan conversation about the way, you know, it's a very funny business. I mean, there's only a handful of people that call races. And, you know, so when one domino moves in a direction, the other dominoes spin out in other areas. I mean, one speculative discussion seemed to be that you calling Monmouth during the summers would be a natural.
Yeah, so I mean, the last 10, so I've been doing this 8 years, so the last 10 years, really, as far as what I've seen, is the rotation in booths. There's been a lot of movement as far as some announcers retiring, moving on, which has created, in essence, opportunities and different announcers to shift around. Obviously, I have had the opportunity to call some races at Monmouth Park and be able to fill in for Frank. We'll see. We'll see how that does play out. Actually, later today, I will be headed up to Monmouth Meadowlands to call the six race card here tonight. So I'll be there tonight, and then I'll be coming back here to get things done tomorrow.
Unbelievable.
That sounds like what jocks do. You're right there.
Exactly.
Right there.
He's...
I love what I do. I really love what I do. I won't be there tomorrow, but tomorrow on Saturday.
Who's calling there Saturday?
It'll be Ken Workington. Ken Workington will be taking care of the duties on Saturday, and then I'll call the duration from there for Monmouth Meadowlands, and looking forward to that. And we'll see. We'll see what happens as far as the you know, the rest of the schedule and how things work out. I'm just kind of taking it day by day.
Very good. Well, of course, you know, one thing that's unusual about the Monmouth at Meadowlands season, usually it's a magnet for wet weather. And so for whatever reason, today and tomorrow, I see it's clear. I mean, I have never seen a meet. It's like tornadoes and trailer parks.
Sure.
It's the craziest. It's like it could be the driest summer in record, the driest fall, and all of a sudden, every single day that they would run that turf card, it would rain. It was nuts. For years, it's been like that.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And actually, the location where you take a look at it, I mean, obviously, Meadowlands is right there. So if there's a concert that's coming up that night or something like that, you're calling the races, and then you're like, uh-oh, it's time to barrel out of here because, you know, some big act has got a stadium that's sold out and this parking lot's going to be jam-packed. But yeah, looking forward to it. I love the work, and I'll be up there tonight. be back here ready to rock and roll tomorrow morning and 13 races right here at Parks.
Well, speaking of Meadowlands, actually, now that you say that, the Jets are home on Sunday at 1 o'clock, and then the Giants are home Monday night.
Okay.
Oh, and by the way, the conversation that you listened to, for those of you that heard Dave Hill, you obviously couldn't bet Cleveland this morning, but that was and really the conversation we had yesterday with David about the weekend, it was really the textbook where the opening line, he had picked Pittsburgh in the paper, in the New York Times, but then yesterday with us, he said there's enough of a line movement here where now I'm taking Cleveland, and he bet Cleveland. In fact, he managed to make the middle.
Hasn't there been a lot of talk about that Ravens-Patriots line this weekend, too?
You tell me. I think
the Ravens are like a three-point favorite.
3.5,
like
yeah.
That on the road?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't that seem low? I don't know. It seems kind of low, doesn't it? I mean, Ravens kind of dominant. Patriots
struggling a little.
Well, 1-1. I don't know.
That's an interesting question. That was one game we did not talk about yesterday. In fact, these segments I'm doing with David Hill.
Sure.
I find David just remarkable and engaging about anything. He has such an understanding about the nature of gambling.
Mm-hmm.
And the mentality of gambling. Sure. And the mechanics. So, letting him riff, and then he goes off in a direction, and it prompts a question from me. So yesterday we ended up really having an extended visit with him, which I didn't expect. And we looked at, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, with nine of the 16 games, as it turns out, but not the Ravens, pass.
Well, and the pressure of a morning line is definitely a pressure in horse racing. I don't do it here, but just the pressure of putting out a morning line, because on big days like this, you take a look at who's the morning line favorite, and if people agree or disagree whether a horse is going to be that. Setting a football line, I can't even imagine the pressure that's involved there, because that's a whole different ball game.
Well, these days it's much more fluid. I mean, when we couldn't bet on it, let's be honest.
Sure.
When you had to go see Nunzio at the corner bar, that was a different story. You both know a Nunzio or two. I know you.
The statutes of limitations
are over on Nunzio.
I knew a Nunzio here or there.
Exactly. Even if he wasn't named Nunzio, you knew a Nunzio.
We called him Nunzio anyway.
I grew up in Santa Monica. It was more of a Chad. I don't think it was like a Nunzio.
That's funny, actually. That's very funny. That's quite good.
From North Jersey to Chicago, it was Nunzio.
There you go.
Exactly. These lines have gotten, and this is a big part of what we've been discussing with Dave, with this unabated.com, which is a line tracker, and basically is projecting, and it's interesting because the same discussion about locking in a number is obviously going on in our side of the fence with the fixed odds, and with the potential proliferation of it, especially in light of what we're dealing with the volatility of odds after the gates open, based on the last flash and the inundation, of CAW money that has made things just maddening for players. And so, locking in a number, getting more and more play and interest.
Yeah, I can definitely see that growing. I think when you talk about fixed odds and you talk about whether it's a younger generation and understanding gambling and understanding wagering, when you can lock in, it's probably easier for me to explain it to a younger person when you say, this is the number, this is what you're getting on your return, as opposed to the number going up and down from a parimutuel standpoint and fluctuating. So we'll see how it does develop. Happy to be a part of it, see what happens with the wagering as it goes into the future. And it's a new time, I'm sure. Man, I mean, just, I'm thinking about Dwayne Lucas going to be here this Saturday and this weekend. Can you imagine how many races and how many different lines and tote boards and morning lines and everything else that you've seen? Same thing.
Gambling has taken so many different forms, though.
Sure.
You know, and there's one thing about horse racing. It's a cerebral bet.
Yeah.
You can handicap. You can, you know, try to discuss and see what horses you come up with. It's not like playing the lottery or roulette, you know, or casino-type gambling. It's very cerebral horse racing.
Very much.
And so is your NFL, you know, and your sports betting.
Sure.
It's cerebral. So it gives you more input into where you're placing your money.
Well, and you know, the parimutuel market, you know, not to say that fixed odds, I mean, obviously fixed odds are not the parimutuel market, but the idea that you're betting against, not betting against the house, you're betting against everybody else. So an educated opinion goes a long way. And, you know, one thing, despite the fact that we discuss this on an ongoing basis and have for decades, and yet the industry doesn't seem to market this aspect enough, the problem-solving mindset, the type of individual that are like puzzles, like mathematics, like problem-solving, essentially, which is what each race, you know, set of PPs is basically an equation, a mathematical problem. And the game needs to be more aggressively merchandised to people that have that
mentality.
And that capacity and that interest. And I mean, even to the extent of things like math clubs. I mean, look at what Marshall Graham is doing at Rhodes College with his horse racing economics course. That's obviously a whole different discussion, but it's an interesting topic. Let's dive in to some of these questions. And Chris, Tony, and I were sort of skirting, and we discussed a little bit about the two grade ones tomorrow. Let's get some opinions from you.
You're taking a look at the Derby if we're going to get take a look at
start
that
with
first
the Derby.
Race and looking at the Bet Parks Pennsylvania Derby. I guess I was just wondering from a pace standpoint, you know, as a handicapper and when you do take a look at it, you know, where's the speed going to be? Who's going to go to the front? I think there's more speed in the Cotillion on paper than I'm looking at in the PA Derby. We the People ensures a pace. That horse is going to go to the front. It's Flavien Pratt on a horse that was a beaten favorite in West Virginia at Mountaineer in the West Virginia Derby. Two starts back, this horse was one of the top, you know, choices in the Belmont, and now we're going to dismiss the horse at 12-1. I don't know. It was a little tough for me. The tactics on Cyberknife last time out in the Traverse, he showed a bit more speed, a lot more speed actually, being on the front end. Maybe with the rail draw, maybe they said, you know, we want to be up there close, and they just kind of found themselves on the lead. I don't know how to really take a look at that, but they did run a very strong number in there. He battled back to the inside. Tawny Port and Taba. I keep looking at the 5, 6, 7, 8, and I just feel like a lot of the wagering is going to be focused on the middle of the starting gate on Saturday. Zandon, obviously, to the inside has been somewhat of a choice from people that are really on board. If you're a big Epicenter fan, he feels like the horse that you would take a look at because he's only a length a length and a quarter off of him in the Jim Dandy.
Yeah, he's tactical speed.
Last time out, third, beaten 5-plus lengths. Mm-hmm. It does show tactical speed, but, from the one hole, how far back do you think he's going to be? I feel like he's going to be a little further back. I don't know. For me, it just looks like Joel kind of takes a hold of him and says, you know, let's see what the pace scenario is going to be. Taba seems to trip out. I mean, the more and more that I keep looking at the race, it does seem like Taba is going to be able to stalk right off the 6 and make the first move. Cyberknife is
post.
The question.
That's a good post.
Yeah,
Taba.
That's what I mean. I just take a look at his post and I see.
He's not committed.
Sure. I keep looking through it and I say, maybe Naval Aviator is kind of a question to maybe be a bit closer. Wide of Barrio, what's the decision going to be there? It's a pretty good run down the stretch going into the first turn, going a mile and an eighth here at Parks. I think you've got time to make those decisions. I don't think you need to make that decision right away. Obviously,
no,
Tony, you could speak more to that.
You have plenty of time to make that decision. I mean, it's a good run to the first turn. You know, you can absolutely get your eye on what the outside horses are doing. And that's what plays into what your position is with an inside horse. What are these outside horses doing?
I guess I would ask you, Tony, though, in that situation, if you're in the 11 spot and you take a look at, you know, obviously you take a look at the races, how much is Luis going to have to send Wide of Barrio to get that good tracking position? Is he really going to have to ask him, or, you know, is it something to where if he feels like he can just get him into a good stride, then he's going to be able to settle in?
Well, you're coming from that outside post. You definitely don't want to get home hung on the outside of four horses going into the first turn.
Uh-huh.
So my opinion would be send him real hard the first few jumps out of there. But it depends on the horse, too, because you need a horse that you can gear up and then put back to sleep. If he's not that kind of horse and you gear him up and you can't settle him down again, you're in trouble because you might get hung really wide or you might get him too much on the bit where you outran a bunch of them, but you still can't get him to settle and you're utilizing him too early in that race.
And then what about the inside horses? I mean, you were just talking about Zandon, and maybe you guys have already talked about this, but I mean, how much are you asking from the inside as far as some of these horses coming over on you?
And that's the whole thing. When you're talking about these races, you're going to have riders that are riding very aggressively. You know, it's $1 million. Doesn't come up every day. So your outside horses, if they do have tactical speed, they're going to try to use them either real hard to clear horses, or they'll have to take them way back.
Yeah.
Now, Zandon, if he comes out of there and he's not really pressured real hard from the outside because, you know, there is courtesy that riders show each other. If you're not clear, you're not supposed to drop in. But he can come out of there and set himself in a decent position, you know, where hopefully he doesn't get jammed and around going into the first turn.
Yeah, I thought We the People at 12-1 was kind of the value. It just seemed like a horse like that was just a beaten favorite over a sloppy track.
And it's a 3/4 mile track, West Virginia.
Right.
You know, it's not a mile track. So that's a different configuration that you handed that horse, because that was the West Virginia Derby.
Different track. I think you're talking about Charlestown, but Mountaineer.
Mountaineer. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
No, but, you know, but even taking a look at that, what I'm saying don't worry about it, Tony.
West Virginia just stuck out in my mind.
Yeah, but two starts back, you know, again, if you're one of the top choices in the Belmont, you're one of the top choices for a reason. People liked him going into that race, and now we're going to jump off, you know, not that far removed from that effort, so... To me, it looked like the winner probably comes from the 5, 6, 7, or 8 from in the middle of the field. I think that they get the best trips in there. We the People, for whatever reason, just kind of keeps, you know, holding more and more appeal to me. I just don't know who goes with him and takes it right to him early. I feel like the 6 wants the lead. I feel like he's going to get the lead, and then we'll see that run up the backstretch and whatnot. Tony, a lot of people ask me, they've been asking me this week, and I feel like when the weather's a little bit cooler, again, I feel like it's a balanced racetrack, but I do feel like some of the stalkers and closers, when the weather's just a little bit cooler, which it should be tomorrow, seem to have an opportunity.
Yeah, you know, the tracks do change with weather, and they change with weather, with wind conditions. They change with the way the track superintendent is handling them or what conditions he's being faced with. You know, a lot of times you want these tracks on these special race days to have an even bias, but a lot of times they'll grade the track out, and it'll have slight inside bias. You know, when it's a day like today that's a little bit windy, you've got to understand that the water trucks can only put so much water on it between races, and the wind has that tendency, when it's moderate temperatures and windy, to dry it out. And then it becomes a little bit more cuppy, and when a cuppy racetrack doesn't always favor speed, it favors your horses that have a strategy of laying just off the pace, and they will be closing, because cuppy racetracks do favor that for those types of horses. Now today, like we have kind of a breezy day. It's not real warm, but there's only so much water you can put on the track every race. Now today we're not going to race, so we don't have to see what the track does. But cuppy racetracks do play into it in this time of year.
I could listen to this man talk for hours.
I've done that, and it's always interesting. And this particular day has been historically a day where people think, oh, the superintendent is setting the track. They're not setting the track up. They're trying to groom the track, you know, as evenly as possible and as fairly as possible. And a lot of times that does mean, you know, taking a lot of dirt that you know, moves down toward the rail and redistributing it as evenly as possible. But when you do that, a place like this, which has historically had a dead rail and a slow, you know, inside pads. I mean, traditionally, this track for years has been an outside flow. The tendency has been on Derby Day to have, you know, basically redistributed the dirt so that the inside paths are much fairer and a better place to be than normal. the rest of the year, essentially.
Yeah, normally, they, like you said, it has an outside bias, this racetrack, because of the bank of the racetrack and the crown of the track. You'll have dirt. It just gradually moves down towards the inside. Now, when they do put the graders on it and they grade it out, there might be a tendency that they grade it out and the inside might be a little less deep than the middle to the outside.
Okay.
You know, and that's where it helps to be a jock that watches the races that particular day. It also helps to be a jock that's ridden here on a regular basis.
Right.
I can remember in the 96 Derby, which I happened to win.
Attaboy.
Wasn't by accident. But I watched what Roy Smith did with the track, and I thought to myself, man, he really graded it out good. And the track was fast that day, and it had a golden rail.
Yeah.
And guess where Devil's Honor was most of the race?
Yeah.
On the rail.
On the rail.
Until Mike Smith came on to the, took back from the inside and came around me, and I put him in the middle of the racetrack, and then I left him there at the quarter pole.
Quick note before I ask you about the Cotillion. Yes. You got to bring up Skippy Longstocking here, because at 10-1, and it just so happened we talked to Saffy Joseph about his win at Presque Isle the other day, and this horse is this is a now horse that is absolutely kept moving forward in much the same way. I mean, it feels like Cyberknife may have come to hand, you know, a little bit sooner than Skippy Longstocking, but he is not far behind. He is going to be in that price range. Oh, it's the Big Notes team. It's the Law Wilkin and Associates team. There we go. That's a powerhouse. We also are interested, you know, because I'm a fan. I mean, to be honest, if Simplification and Skippy Longstocking both being 10-1 is kind of silly. I mean, Skippy Longstocking is far more likely of a 10-1 than Simplification, who has to kind of regain the mojo. But I've got 8-5-4-1 as the four principals in this race, and then as a second tier, then B-Doc, We the People, Tawny Port, and Simplification,
yep,
as the second tier that could sneak into the exotics. But clearly, Zandon, Skippy, Cyberknife, Taba, they're overwhelmingly likely, a winner coming from there.
Yeah, you're not alone in that thought process,
yeah.
So
I mean,
we'll see what happens.
There we go. A Cotillion thought from you.
Yeah, the race with the Cotillion, I just felt like there was a bit more speed, and I've said this on a few shows that I've been on. I just think that there's no gray area with the people that are looking at Secret Oath. She's going to be the deserving favorite at 2-1 in there, but I just think people are either all in or they're playing completely against. I don't feel like the bettors and the handicappers are out there saying, you know, maybe she's got a shot to, you know, she's going to run her race, and I'm putting her in second or third. It just really feels like people are saying, man, she's going to run away and she's going to draw away and win this one well, or she's just not going to fire her best shot. So we'll see which Secret Oath is going to be the correct one on Saturday. But the runners to the inside are the ones that hold a lot of intrigue. I think Green Up is going to take a lot of interest, attention, action. It's a Rad Ortiz. It's Todd Pletcher teaming up with a horse that's 4 for her last 4. She won the prep here, the local prep in the Catherine Sophia. She did it impressively. She was just drawing away, and she looked like she had plenty left. And Adair Manor has taken the time off since the Black Eyed Susan, but Bob Baffert, he's done very well here in Pennsylvania, especially right here at Parks Racing. And Adair Manor coming off of a layoff, and they say, we're going to go right into the Grade 1 Cotillion. I think that that's a very big sign of confidence. It's a $1 million race, and she looks fantastic on the track. I don't know if Tony got a chance to see her back there, but she does. She's looked good in the mornings. They got here on Tuesday, as far as the Shipman, Taba, and Adair Manor. And you know Bob Baffert is sending them both with very live shots in the Cotillion and also the Derby.
He doesn't come to leave empty-handed.
No, he does not.
Yeah, I thought the two Pletchers were really key to this, Green Up and Goddess of Fire and Shahama, all three Pletchers. And I am not that keen to play Secret Oath.
Okay.
Personally, I'm not saying she can't win. I mean, it's a bit of a referendum. The horse that may get a little bit overlooked in here, and I mean, from a style standpoint, I don't know if society can can wire this field. But she's certainly interesting, and at 8-1, she's an attractive number. I mean, to me, I think you have to make a decision. Adair Manor, Gerrymander, and Secret Oath are all going to take their share of money, and I think they've all got a series of vulnerabilities.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, there are question marks, and some of the horses are stepping up and trying something, you know, against a different class of company that we've seen. You can be very high on Greenup, but she hasn't seen Greatest Stakes Company yet. So, you know, how short of a price are you willing to take? Florangeroux with an outside draw, with a horse that's got speed, it just always seems like in big races he finds a way to put them in the right position to win the race. Society could fit that profile. She's by Gunrunner, who's obviously had a fantastic start to his stud career. To see another Gunrunner win a Grade 1 race wouldn't be very surprising. They get the draw, Steve Asmussen sending her over. Steve Asmussen had a huge year last year with Jackie's Warrior, Clairiere, just a massive season here in Pennsylvania. We'll see if they do continue it, but she's got a shot. She wasn't one of the ones that I was really keen on. I just think that their speed, we'll see if Secret Oath shows up. I think that that's kind of the main question, and we'll see what happens there.
Before you go, I know you got a press conference at 10, but Gallant Bob, Turf Monster, anything else on the card? The 14-horse Gallant Bob?
The only thing I can say is, it kicks off that pick five sequence. It's the Philly Big Five there to kick things off at race number 9. It's $102,000. It's a mandatory distribution. That's Right is probably going to take a lot of action to the inside on the Turf Monster. It's a rail draw. He's got to go. If he doesn't get the lead, I think it opens things way up for a price in the Turf Monster. And then the Gallant Bob, running son of a gun, he's been running against some really strong horses. He comes back here, Jack Christopher, Gunite. Those horses would be favored in this spot. So when you take a look at Luis Saez being aboard a horse at 6-1 for John Toscano Jr., another Gunrunner, I'm pointing it out, but this horse has really come to hand. Hasn't won, and he's been massive prices in his last four starts just because of the company he's been keeping. But man, 6-1 on running center of a gun would be tough for me to kind of shy away from. I think that horse has got a lot of ability sprinting.
We had a lot of fun with Running Son of a Gun this summer, and basically identifying him as the right price for what we call the reverse tri-key concept, and we're well rewarded. That was one of the – we had John Toscano on the show, too, talking about – it was really – he's just a hard hitter. This is one of those dream-type claims that you just – you can't – you can't believe your luck that you end up with a horse like this.
What did he claim him for? 30?
30, I think.
Yeah, 30,000. I thought that's what it was.
Well, there's plenty of others that we could talk about, but you've got house business. So get over there. Chris Griffin, everybody, in the grandstand. There he is. And he'll be bringing you all the action from Meadowlands. Let me get a picture of the two of you for the listing. That'll work. All right. There we go. No, you don't have to do that.
That's want me to stand on the chair?
No, you don't have to stand on the chair. That's hysterical. All right. Unbelievable.
Take care.
Chris Griffin, everybody. And off he goes to his press conference action. He's wearing the Pennsylvania Derby shirt. We're up near the top of the hour. Let's take the break here. We'll start to get some other handicapping voices in, including Scott Shapiro. Scott's free. Let's get Shap in here. We'll start with Scott. And we got to talk to Callie Francois. We'll get the action in from High Hope Pimlico. We'll go to Oklahoma City and talk to the Dale Day. And we've got Scully, too, in this next hour. Nick Tamaro later, Hammer, Popo, and Tom Law showed up with Wilkin. We'll get Tom to come over as well. Tony Black is hanging out with us. And for the second time in what? In a month and a half.
That's right. We were at Delaware not too long ago. It's always a pleasure to be here with you, Steve. And I especially like your handicapping prowess, and I like the handicappers that you have. And I might even be able to bet on a winner just because I'm listening to you.
Well, Tony's providing plenty of insight himself about this racetrack. And, the fact is, style-wise, I did not necessarily see, going through this card, I did not really see, where's my Gallant Bob stuff? think I, no, I had it. What the hell happened? Again, I'll find it on the break. But I did not see any, you know, any extreme issues, you know, in terms of either red hot pace or slow paces. I didn't notice anybody necessarily loose on leads, etc. So I think you got a scenario we should have, you know, fair, honest.
It's some interesting racing.
Yeah,
and you know what? When you see fields where there is a multitude of speed or several speed horses, then it becomes a jockey's race. Because sometimes the jockey mentality is, oh, too much speed in this race.
I'm going to pull back.
Yeah, and everybody pulls back. And,
yep.
And the dummy that goes winds up setting
exactly.
The walk the dog pace. I was usually the dummy that went.
Well, you preferred. You made him go where you'd already been.
Right. I didn't like the dirt in my face.
Who would?
Like I always say, it's not how fast you're going. It's how you're going fast.
Exactly. There's the gallop, Bob. All right, I got it. Taking the break here, Scott Shapiro is going to join us. Let's not dawdle. Top of the hour exactly. An hour in, we're live at Park for the first time ever. And what a perfect little setting here on the first floor for those of you that are coming for the first time. And if you've never been, it's a terrific facility. And tomorrow is always a absolutely terrific day. There's outdoor activities. They got the family picnic grove area. They give away Pennsylvania Derby hats to everybody. And it's always a super atmosphere here. And, of course, Johnny D will be on hand and Gail for our traditional get-together. Looking forward to that. Our man, Will Schwartz, I guess you and I may be standing in because Will is running leader of the band in the Pennsylvania Bred Race and, of course, off the win in Saratoga. And Chub Wagon draws the rail. Leader of the band, who's the 9-5 favorite, draws the outside. And sure feels like leader of the band is the right horse in the Plum Pretty. So
Chub Wagon,
he's away though. He's in.
And Chub Wagon runs in that race.
Yeah,
and, you know, and he's a homebred by Danny Lopez bred him.
Nice.
And I think he's a much better horse.
Short.
And Danny was much better horse short. And I think Danny was a much better trainer than he was. I mean, a much better breeder than he was a trainer.
I love it. Frank Generazio too. Back after this hour two at the Races from Park.
At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
The Southern California Thoroughbred Racing Circuit returns to Los Alamitos with opening day set for Friday, September 16th. Four stakes races highlight the meet led by the Los Alamitos Special on Saturday, September 24th. The meet will feature stakes every Saturday and Sunday afternoon. And racing fans, the meet will also feature an on-track live money handicapping contest on Saturday, September 24th. You could win a berth to the 2022 NHC. And racing fans, the best of night racing continues at Los Alamitos every Saturday and Sunday night. Outstanding racing action is in store this weekend with stakes trials highlighting the racing car. Plus, our nighttime $2 pick six continues to be a popular wager. If there's not a carryover going into our Sunday night program, Los Alamitos will add $10,000 to the